How long have you been with the Seattle Police Department?
21 years.
What kind of jobs have you had over those 21 years?
Well, every officer, I started out as a patrol officer in the East Precinct in the Central District. I worked there for 5 years, transferred downtown, rode mountain bikes as an officer downtown for a couple years. Then went to what is known as the anti-crime team for about 3 years. And after that, I went into detectives, the West Precinct Detective Unit, later to the pawn shop detail, and my most recent assignment prior to becoming the full-time guild president was in the Major Crimes Task Force.
So you've always have never been in management. You've always been represented by SPO.
Yes, always been Seattle Police Officers Guild member.
So what were your thoughts about the Guild? I mean, having been represented by it for so many years, I'm sure you had some ideas on how it was working.
Well, I actually was a shop steward years ago in the late 90s in both the East and West precincts. I served 2 terms on the board of directors and 1 term as the elected secretary treasurer. So I had a very good working knowledge of the mission and how things are working.
And what was your impression of the Guild? Do you think it was doing a good job?
Well, I think the Guild has always done a good job of representing its members in bargaining with the city, making sure that a fair collective bargaining agreement was presented to the membership for votes when that comes up, and providing fair representation to our members when they require it, when they're dealing with discipline issues with the department or other personnel issues.
Why did you decide to run for president? What did you think you could bring to the union?
Well, my predecessor, Sergeant Rich O'Neill, served in that position for 8 years. I saw him move the organization forward in many ways, business practices, some of the things that programs we put into place for members in the political action arena. And I just really felt that I needed to step up. And when he was done with his term, and to run so that I can continue to move the organization forward.
Now, you were the only person who ran, is that right?
Yes.
Why do you suppose that is?
Well, I have been told by many people, though I don't feel this way, that I have a thankless job. We have, 1,260 members with, diverse views, equally valid opinions on how things should be run, but you can't please everybody. And it's not just an eight-hour-a-day job. At times I'm on the phone till 9, 10 o'clock at night dealing with issues. Phone rings in the middle of the night when something happens that needs my attention. And, I don't think that this job is just for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've said you were trying to set a new tone for the union, kind of away from a contention posture and more toward collaboration. What did you mean by the first part of that? Was there too much contention going on?
Well, it wasn't by design. It was a matter of necessity. Rich O'Neill did not have the ability to have a collaborative relationship with the former chiefs of police. They just didn't engage labor. They would push their way through policies or putting things into place and then wait for us to grieve it or file an unfair labor practice. There was no collaboration. There was also nobody during his tenure that would stand up and for the rank and file. And I believe he felt it was his responsibility to do so in taking some of the positions that he took. But also there was no other way for him to operate because there was no collaboration from the management at the time. When I was on the search committee appointed by the mayor for the new police chief, when we interviewed the finalists, it was very clear to me that Chief O'Toole was far and away the best candidate compared to everybody else. And, of course, she ended up as a finalist. I reached out to the president of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association and asked his opinion about Chief O'Toole, and he told me hands down it was the best superintendent he ever worked for. I asked him why, And part of those reasons were that she was collaborative in nature, would engage labor, respected labor. And I find that to be true today. So I am in a unique position, and I would be remiss if I did not take the opportunity to engage in collaboration as long as that those doors are open.
Now, a lot of times, rank and file want their union to fight for them. They kind of want contention in a way because that shows that the union's sticking up for them. Has this been a hard sell for your constituents to say, no, I want to collaborate. I want to give this police chief a chance?
You know, some people, I've heard from some people that, you know, I've been accused of being too close with her. Was accused of being a, quote, bootlicker, unquote. And to that I say, I would be doing the membership a disservice if I did not engage in collaboration with Chief O'Toole. And I've got a list of accomplishments that we've accomplished as a union since she's been here. And there's a lot more we can do. But it's some people disagree with my strategy at this point, and they're entitled to their opinion.
Give me an example of how you've found the chief to be more collaborative on a specific issue that has worked out to the mutual benefit of the union and the administrator.
Well, I'll give you a first example that sticks out is when she arrived, we had a series of officer-involved shootings in late 2013 and early 2014. Those officers involved in those incidents had been left at home on an administrative reassignment because nobody in the previous administration could figure out how they wanted to structure the Firearms Review Board. There was a need to change the format of the Firearms Review Board to comply with the consent decree, but they did not engage, you know, a process to allow these officers to have their process done so they could get back to work. This was causing, you know, these officers some great consternation. They wanted to get back to work.
They were just sitting at home. And there was no process to get through it.
Yeah, no process to get through it. So I brought it up to Chief O'Toole, who immediately took action. She made a couple phone calls, from what I understand it, to other agencies who had been through a consent decree. I believe it was LAPD. And within a matter of a week, we had a process in place where officers, how they would be processed after an officer-involved shooting to go through the review process and then get back to work. And that's worked fabulously since that happened. And that conversation took place since she'd only been here about a month.
What's the status of the Police Officers Guild contract right now? Or is that being negotiated? Or?
It is. As a matter of fact, when I leave here today, I'll go sit down with the city for another session of negotiations. I won't say midstream. We're getting close to midstream, and things are going well.
What would you say would be the toughest things to work out?
Well, it's no different this year than any other year. It's in the area of accountability. The city, you know, always wants to make changes to the accountability system, but the Police Guild has in years past. In 1999, we agreed in collective bargaining to adopt the Office of Professional Accountability. For the very first time in 2007, there was a blue ribbon panel that the mayor had put together making recommendations on accountability changes. We negotiated all those items. There were 29 of them. And I'm confident that whatever is being discussed right now, we'll get through it in a collaborative way and, you know, get something that both sides can live with.
To step up a back step, a few years ago, as you mentioned, there is a consent decree right now. A few years ago, the Justice Department found the Seattle police inappropriately used excessive force and coming after some well-publicized accounts of officers using force. And as a result, there is this consent decree. It's a legal agreement between the city of Seattle and the Justice Department, and it requires changes at the department to prevent further abuses. Did you think that Justice Department investigation findings were correct?
No. I know that there were changes that needed to be made in the department, but for them to say that one out of five times when somebody, when an officer used force, it was unconstitutional 20% of the time, I find that flabbergasting that some people wouldn't have been in jail if that was the case. And commanders that, you know, when under the old model, when force was used, an officer would have to complete a use of force report. That was screened and forwarded on by the immediate sergeant. Then it went to the lieutenant, and then it went to the precinct captain, and ultimately all the way up to the bureau chief of the unit that the officer or detective was assigned to. If 20% of the time that force was unconstitutional, we had a bureau chief approving of the use of force report. I don't know why it was written that way, and that in fact is the reason why so many officers were upset at the report, because it basically, you know, says that 20% of the time we're doing things against the law. That said, that train's left the station. That's in the rearview mirror. We're in the process of satisfying the prongs of the settlement agreement, and the department, I believe, is doing a very good job of moving through it.
Given that you're not really on board with the idea behind the whole consent agreement, is it hard for you as head of the police union to kind of work on efforts on the consent agreement?
Well, it's not hard at all. Again, that train's left the station. I mean, that's yesterday's news. The city and the federal government have an agreement. All of us work for the city of Seattle. Our employer entered into the agreement. So what needs to be done now is we need to keep moving forward on all of the steps that need to be taken to satisfy the settlement agreement and get into the monitoring period so ultimately we can get out from underneath this and move forward.
You know, there were some reports that there was some depolicing going on, meaning that officers felt as though they were being criticized for using so much force, so they were kind of backing off and not really doing it as hard as they would have out of fears or maybe as part of a protest about the consent agreement. Is that true?
Well, I don't believe that depolicing exists at all. I just think officers are working smarter. They're being told by their employer what's expected of them. I believe they got the hint that, what's expected of them is for them to work smarter. And I believe that's what they were doing and still do.
Now, some police officers on their own, without the union, pursued a lawsuit against the consent decree. They were saying it made it more dangerous to be a police officer. I thought it was really interesting that the Guild did not join that suit. Why not?
Well, because it was not the right thing to do. The federal government, again, in the city, entered into an agreement. There was a policy that was created, which is a mess. The use of force policy is an absolute mess. 80-some pages where it used to be 15, ambiguous language, poorly written. And, you know, I get all that. But the way to try to affect change to that policy is through using the collaborative process with the Community Police Commission. Every one of the policies put into place has a 6-month review period in it to see how it's working. And so what I tried to steer these members to do was to, give their examples of problems with the policy to the Community Police Commission, through the department, and try to work on it that way. And I, for whatever reason, I don't believe that they trusted that process. However, at July of last year, started the review period for the use of force policy. I requested, and the Community Police Commission held forums at all the precincts down at the union office for officers to come in to talk about issues with the use of force policy, giving tangible examples of things. And they took that information back and made recommendations for changes to the policy. And as I understand it, there are going to be some changes coming out soon from that feedback from our members.
Now, did you get a lot of flack from members for not going along with that lawsuit? I mean, you've just said that you felt as though some of the stuff in that report went way too far in accusing police of using too much force.
Yeah, I got some flack, and I still continue to get some. And again, that goes back to what we talked about before of having this contentious relationship. But one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is myself and the union board of directors have a fiduciary responsibility to the organization. We have to do what's right for the entire organization. And around the time that there was talk of a lawsuit, I made a phone call down to the Los Angeles Police Protective League, and they had been through a consent decree, and I talked to their union president about what are the biggest mistakes that were made along the way. And they said they spent too much time fighting it. And it was basically they had a lost decade because they dug in. So given that, it wasn't my unilateral decision not to back their the lawsuit. It was the decision of the board of directors. And there was some consultation with counsel at the time regarding the prospects for that. And the board of directors made the decision that they did.
Police are subject to all kinds of disciplinary activities when they're found to be behaving badly. And I understand that you've said that you get it when a police officer is mistreated by the department hierarchy because of an experience of your own?
Yes. About 6 years ago, I was involved in an incident in another state where I was ultimately indicted for some crimes I didn't commit.
There were Hells Angels involved?
Yes. It was a... I think the state's attorney in South Dakota said that I was a victim of a violent premeditated attack. In the course of that investigation, I cooperated fully and told the truth. And when the investigating agency checked with the police department regarding the ownership of the firearm involved, the police department got it wrong and ultimately got me indicted for perjury, which is a very serious thing. And as soon as that was cleared up, my counsel at the time had it cleared up that charge was dropped. But ultimately, the police chief at the time totally turned his back on myself and my family, would not take my wife's phone call when I was out of state. She did not know, what was going on with me. He wouldn't take her call. And he made comments out in the public basically prejudging the situation before all the facts were heard. So, yes, I know what it's like to be mistreated by the department. At the same time, that's yesterday's news. I chose to, when that was all said and done, to not be a bitter employee, to try to pitch in, to do things to help others in similar circumstances so that they understand that there is light at the end of the tunnel when you're involved in something high profile and serious.
Just briefly, what happened?
It was in a establishment at the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, and for whatever reason, I was with a group of other police officers in a police motorcycle club, and for whatever reason, members of the other motorcycle club came over, and I was hit from behind, woke up on the ground in a chokehold, being kicked and beaten. Could hear people talking about knives, and I was losing consciousness, and I had a choice to make, and I made a choice to stop the assault. And
what did you do?
I drew my firearm and shot my assailant.
Acting in self-defense.
Acting in self-defense, which was... ultimately decided by the state's attorney in South Dakota.
I want to talk about another side of police discipline of officers. There have been cases in the past where after officers were disciplined, the union intervened and that punishment was overruled and thrown out. And I'm wondering how that affects the ability of the police department to manage. Can they manage when they make a decision of that gravity and it just gets reversed down the line? How does their action have any credibility?
Well, the department is supposed to be disciplining its employees for with a just cause standard. They have to prove their case. And depending on the severity of the allegations, it's either by the preponderance of evidence or it's by clear and convincing evidence. If somebody, one of my members decides that they want to request an appeal for some type of discipline, they have two avenues currently that they can go to. They can appeal their discipline through the Public Safety Civil Service Commission, or they can request an arbitration through the Guild. When one of those requests to the Guild is made, we have a discipline committee of the Board of Directors. They will review the case, decide if the city has met its burden or not, if the discipline was proportional to the offense, if it was consistent with other people doing similar things. And if that's not the case, then they can approve a disciplinary review board. Ultimately, those are set for a hearing at some time in the future where an arbitrator or the Civil Service Commission will hear the case and make a ruling. During the time pending the hearing, it's not uncommon, you know, for the city to approach the guild or the guild to approach the city to want to settle one of these things once they have a take a better look at it, see if they have a case they want to take to court, if you will. And sometimes those are settled. And I know at the beginning of 2014, there was some rumbling about some decisions that Interim Chief Bailey had made. And ultimately, you know, that the process remains the same, but I think there's a different review on part of the city than had been done before. But we have routinely settled grievances. I've settled several grievances with the city, short of a hearing recently.
Does the union ever look at police officers saying, "Well, this punishment was wrong," and go, "No, it was right"?
We've done that several times, and we're currently reviewing a request right now, and I don't know what the decision of the board of directors is going to be, but we're not afraid to say that the city got it right. But too many times in the past, the city has not got it right. And we owe our members a duty of fair representation. I mean, I know the public doesn't quite understand that the department doesn't get it right all the time, but they don't, and I'm hoping that they will in the future. And if they do get it right and somebody comes to us, you know, requesting an appeal, we're not going to appeal just on the basis of appealing to appeal. We will do it based on we have a good case to make that the city did not do their job.
I'm speaking with Ron Smith. He's president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. They represent the officers of the Seattle Police. Earlier this year, The Stranger quoted you as telling officers in the union you lead that if they weren't willing to work with a diverse population, to, quote, leave and go someplace that serves your worldview, end quote. Why did you feel it necessary to say that?
Well, that's not exactly what I said, and I know that The Stranger ran a salacious headline. I was asked, you know, if, you know, we have 1,260-some members, that if some members didn't like the political environment here, what were their options as a police officer? And I said that they were, you know, basically, there are lateral hires all across the state, and people have left. Some of our members have left in the past to go to Renton PD, Lakewood PD, other places, federal agencies, that if somebody didn't like it here, that there was probably someplace else that, you know, was a little less liberal and quirky than Seattle. And that's what I meant. I mean, it's obvious that there are other places, you know, across the state and across the country that aren't of the same political spectrum as Seattle.
It is a liberal, quirky place. Does that make it harder to be a police officer here?
Well, I don't think it makes it any harder to be a police officer in a liberal, quirky place than in a conservative, stuffy place. You know, being a police officer is a great profession. It's an honorable profession, but it comes with a lot of responsibility. And the public will always, and rightly so, hold police officers to a higher standard. And you know, the vast majority of the public, wherever it's at, supports law enforcement, and they expect a lot from law enforcement. And if you know, there's more criticism here in Seattle, then so be it. But I don't think it's I don't think people, no matter where it occurs, or any less critical law enforcement than in Seattle.
How was that comment of yours? If you don't like liberal and quirky, maybe you got to go somewhere else. How was that received by the rank and file?
Well, I mean, I think some people saw it for what it was, that I didn't write the headline and, you know, the story wasn't written quite in the order that the questions were asked, but that's neither here nor there. I think most people understand it, that, you know, I also said that we need to, I was asked what, you know, we need to do to get, you know, the public trust back again. I don't think we ever lost the public trust, but it's always, if we can do anything to improve public relations, you know, I said that we need to treat people with respect, and we need to check our politics at the door when we come to work. We need to be apolitical. I mean, we're police officers. We're not robots. We're humans, but we're public servants. And, you know, that was received, you know, not so well in some circles. And I think the majority of the concern is that how I would dare to talk to a stranger reporter to begin with. And the stranger is just as relevant in Seattle as the Times or anything else. It's a place where people get their information, they get their news. And if you don't engage with folks, then they're going to write what they want to write anyways without having your input.
This seems to be a conscious decision on your part. I mean, your predecessors have not been willing to come in and sit down for an interview with us or talk to the stranger or do other things. So you're thinking in different ways about dealing with the media.
Sure. I mean, and I recognize the role that I have, that people have great interest in law enforcement and how the Guild operates. And I will talk to anybody as long as I'm not misquoted or maligned, if you will. And I give everybody a fair shake.
A few Seattle Police Department officers posted some racially insensitive comments on Facebook, and this prompted a new social media policy from the police department. There's an issue here, free speech versus how you present yourself in public when you're a police officer. How have officers reacted to that policy? What do you think about that policy?
Well, it's unfortunate that we had to have a policy like that to begin with. I think there were prongs of the department manual already existing that could have addressed people to not being professional at all times. But people have to understand, I've been to many, many seminars and I've had legal opinions that our relationship with the government is not that of a citizen and a subject, if you will. We have a mutually beneficial relationship with the city of Seattle because we're employees there. We agreed to be an employee there. The department has to have the ability to run its department effectively and not lose the public trust based on things that happen. And anytime that you're going to make comments that can be attributed to you that are not a matter of public concern, that when you're speaking as a private citizen, you're not going to have any protection by your employer. We work for a public employer. I would not be surprised if somebody at Microsoft was talking poorly about Windows 10, that they might not be fired, or somebody at a mechanic at Boeing talking poorly about the 787 program, that they might not be fired. And people just need to be mindful that when you are held to a higher standard, if you say things that can be linked to you as a police officer with the city of Seattle, then that's going to cause the department problems, and the department is going to take it seriously.
What do you think are the big misunderstandings people have about police work, things they just don't get about what you do?
Well, I think one of the things I constantly shake my head at is a routine traffic stop. Well, there's no routine traffic stop. We just had a Boston police officer the other day pull somebody over and walked up to the car and he got shot in the face. That was a traffic stop and it was far from routine. Anything can happen on a traffic stop. Another thing is the criticism of, why didn't you just shoot him in the knee? Well, when officers are involved in a shooting situation, which is very rare, but when that happens, the things that happen to the body and your eyesight and your all the physiological things that happen make it impossible to probably focus on a very small spot like a knee. So that's why the training is to fire at the biggest part of the anatomy, the chest, until the threat is stopped, because we're responsible for every bullet that comes out of your gun, and we don't need to be missing and hitting innocent people behind or going through a wall of a building and those type of things. So those kind of tactics they watch too much CSI, that we're going to be able to solve a crime in a minute, and basically watch too many police shows that show police work in the light that it truly isn't.
What do you think about the use of these cameras on police officers? Do you think that's going to improve police work?
Well, there's still talk about that. There's a pilot program going on right now. But I just find it ironic that in a city that didn't want to have surveillance cameras on the water over at Alki, you know, to protect us from the boogeyman, and a city that was up in arms over drones that could have helped us do things besides surveilling people, finding evidence and, you know, use for other things. They didn't want to have any of that, but now they want police officers to have a body cam on that is not pointed at the police officers, pointed at the public, which is, I can't wrap my mind around that. But if I believe that should the city go down that way, that this would be another tool in the tool belt. It's not the magic pill that's going to cure all the world's ills, but it will, I believe, exonerate officers that are falsely accused of bias or things that they did not do. I think that the public would actually interact better with officers when they're told that you'd be an audio and video recorded. And, you know, if it helped gain confidence in the community, then I think it would be a good thing. But we're a long way away from having a permanent policy.
You're 1 year into this 3-year position. What are your thoughts about running again?
Well, I'm one thing I've realized, you know, or not realized, I've come to know full well in this first year is how frustrated the rank and file are on the street with the ever-changing policies, with the you know, policy that's passed and then it gets amended again, and all of these policies related to the settlement agreement, that there is a lot of angst out there amongst the rank and file because it's an ever-changing world. It's hide the ball type thing. And I appreciate their frustration and what it's like to be out there. I'm confident that things will get better. As far as me running for a second term, I'll take one day at a time. We'll get to the end and see what my family thinks and what I think about it. I'm not opposed to another term, but I'd like to get through this first one.
You sound like Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush.
Well,
not ready to commit.
Well, I'd have to see at some point I'll be done. I mean, at some point, and so kind of like the way Rich O'Neill brought me along. I was his right-hand man for 3 years, and I learned a lot from him. I learned what doesn't work and what does work. I'm hoping to bring somebody along in the next, I don't know if that'll be the next 2 years, but I'm hoping to bring somebody along that can replace me. I don't believe in ever going backwards. I believe in going forwards, building on the successes that we've had. And I'll be looking for that person that I can do that with.